Now, focus it. Grain by grain. You are going to separate the sand into two piles. One dark and one light. You may begin.
He said it like they were in a race, and he'd given them the green light, but Call, Tamara, and Aaron just stared at him in horror. Tamara was the first to find her voice.
Separate out the sand? She said. But shouldn't we be learning something more useful, like fighting rogue elementals or piloting the boat or—
Two piles, said Rufus. One light, one dark. Start now.
He turned around and walked away. The wall became transparent again as he approached it, then turned back to stone as he passed through.
Don't we even get a toolkit?
Tamara called sadly after him. The three of them were alone in a room with no windows and no doors. Call was glad he didn't have claustrophobia, or he'd be chewing off his own arm.
Well, said Aaron, I guess we should start.
Even he didn't manage to say it with any enthusiasm. The floor was cold when Call sat, and he wondered how long it would be before the dampness made his leg ache. He tried to ignore this thought as Tamara and Aaron sat down, making a triangle around the sand pile. They all stared at it. Finally, Tamara stuck out her hand and some sand rose into the air.
Light, she said, sending a grain spinning toward the floor. Dark.
She sent that one on the floor, too, a little distance away.
Light. Dark. Dark. Light.
I can't believe I was worried magic school was going to be dangerous, Call said, squinting at the sand pile.
You could die of boredom, said Aaron.
Call snickered. Tamara looked up at them miserably.
The thought of that is the only thing that's going to keep me going.
As difficult as Call had imagined it to be to move tiny grains of sand with his mind, it was even harder than that. He remembered the times he'd moved things before, how he'd accidentally broken the bowl during his exam with Master Rufus, and how it had felt like a buzzing in his mind. He concentrated on that buzzing while he stared at the sand. And it started to move. It felt a little like he was operating a device with a remote control. It wasn't his fingers picking up the sand, but he was still making it happen. His hands felt clammy, and his neck strained, making a single grain hover in the air for long enough to see whether it was light or dark was tricky. Even worse was setting it down without messing up the pile already there. More than once, his concentration slipped and he dropped a grain into the wrong pile. Then he had to find it and pull it back out, which took time and even more concentration. There were no clocks in the sand room, and neither Call nor Aaron nor Tamara were wearing watches, so Call had no idea how much time was passing. Finally, another student showed up. He was tall and lanky, dressed in blue with a bronze wristband that indicated he'd been at the Magisterium 3 years. Call thought he might have been sitting with Tamara's sister and Master Rockmaple in the refectory that morning. Call squinted at him to see if he looked particularly sinister, but he just grinned from under a tangle of messy brown hair and dropped a burlap bag of lichen and cheese sandwiches, along with an earthenware pitcher of water at their feet.
Eat up, kids,
he said, and headed out the way he'd come. Call realized he was starving. He'd been concentrating for hours and his brain felt fuzzy. He was exhausted, much too tired to make conversation as he ate. Worse, as he studied the remaining sand, they'd made it only a small part of the way through the pile. The heap that remained seemed enormous. This was not flying. This wasn't what he'd pictured when he'd imagined doing magic. This stank.
Come on, Aaron said, or we're going to have to eat dinner down here.
Call tried to concentrate, focusing his attention on a single grain, but then his mind slipped sideways into anger. The sand exploded, all the piles flying sideways, grains splashing the walls and settling into a giant, unsorted mess. All of their hard work was undone. Tamara sucked in her breath in horror.
What? What did you do?
Even Aaron looked at Call like he was going to strangle him. It was the first time Call had ever seen Aaron look angry. Call wanted to say he was sorry, but he bit down on the words. He knew they wouldn't matter.
It just happened.
I'm going to kill you, Tamara said very calmly. I am going to sort your guts into piles.
Said Call. He kind of believed her.
Okay, Aaron said, taking big, calming breaths, hands in his hair like he was trying to press all that rage back into his skull.
Okay. We're just going to have to do it all over again.
Tamara kicked the sand, then crouched down and began the tedious work of moving single grains with her mind. She didn't even look in Call's direction. Call tried to concentrate again, eyes burning. By the time Master Rufus came and told them they were free to go to dinner and then back to their rooms, Call's head was pounding, and he'd decided he never wanted to go to the beach ever again. Aaron and Tamara wouldn't look at him as they made their way through the corridors. The refectory was full of kids chatting away amicably, a lot of them giggling and laughing. Call, Tamara, and Aaron stood in the doorway behind Master Rufus and stared blearily ahead of them. All of them had sand in their hair and dirt streaks on their faces.
I will be eating with the other masters, Master Rufus said. Do as you like with the rest of your evening.
Moving like robots, Call and the others gathered up food, mushroom soup, more piles of different colored lichen, and an odd opalescent pudding for dessert, and went over to sit at a table with another clump of Iron Year students. Call recognized a few of them, like Drew, Jasper, and Celia. He sat down across from Celia, and she didn't immediately dump her soup on his head, a thing that had actually happened at his last school, so that seemed like a good sign. The masters sat together at a round table across the room, probably brainstorming new tortures for the students. Call was sure he could see several of them smiling in a sinister way. While he was watching, three people in olive-green uniforms, two women and a man, came through the doorway. They bowed shallowly to the table of masters.
They're assembly members, Celia informed Call. It's our governing body, set up after the Second Mage War. They're hoping one of the older kids turns out to be a Chaos Mage.
Like that Enemy of Death guy? Call asked. What happens if they find Chaos Mages? Do they kill them or what?
Celia lowered her voice. No, of course not. They want to find a Chaos Mage. They say it takes a Makar to stop a Makar. As long as the enemy is the only one of the Makaris alive, he has the advantage over us.
If they even think someone here has that power, they'll check it out, said Jasper, moving down so he was closer to the discussion. They're desperate.
No one believes that the treaty will last, said Gwenda, and if the war starts up again...
Well, what makes them think anyone here could be what they're looking for?
Call asked.
Like I said, Jasper told him, they're desperate. But don't worry, your scores are way too lousy. Chaos mages have to actually be good at magic.
For a minute, Jasper had acted like a normal human being, but apparently that minute was over. Celia glared at him. Everyone launched into a discussion of their first lessons. Drew told them that Master Lemuel had been really tough during their lessons, and he wanted to know if everyone else's masters were like that. Everyone started talking at once, with a bunch of others describing lessons that sounded a lot less frustrating and more fun than Cole's had been. "Master Milagros, let us pilot the boats," Jasper gloated. "There were little waterfalls. It was like whitewater rafting. Awesome!"
"Great," Tamara said without enthusiasm. "Jasper got us all lost," Celia said, serenely munching a piece of lichen, and Jasper's eyes flashed with annoyance.
"Only for a minute," Jasper said. "It was fine."
"Master Tanaka showed us how to make fireballs," said a boy named Peter, and Cole remembered that Tanaka was the name of the master who had chosen after Milagros.
"We held the fire, and we didn't even get burned."
His eyes sparkled.
"Master Lemuel threw rocks at us," said Drew.
Everyone stared at him.
"What?"
said Aaron.
"Drew,"
hissed Laurel, another of Master Lemuel's apprentices.
"He did not. He was showing us how you can move rocks with your mind. Drew got in the way of a rock."
"That explains the big bruise on Drew's collarbone,"
Cole thought, feeling a little sick. He remembered his father's warnings about how the masters didn't care about hurting students.
"Tomorrow it's going to be metal," said Drew. "I bet he throws knives at us."
"I'd rather have knives thrown at me than spend all day in a pile of sand," said Tamara, unsympathetic.
"At least you can dodge knives."
"Looks like Drew can't," said Jasper with a smirk.
For once, he was picking on someone who wasn't Cole. But Cole didn't get any pleasure from it.
"It can't be all lessons around here," said Aaron, an edge to his usually peaceful voice, "right? There's got to be something fun. What was that place Master Rufus told us about?"
"We could go to the gallery after dinner," Celia said, speaking directly to Cole. "There's games."
Jasper looked annoyed. Cole knew he should go with Celia to the gallery, whatever that was. Anything that made Jasper mad was worth doing, and besides, he needed to learn to navigate the Magisterium, make a map like you did in video games. He needed an escape route. Cole shook his head and forked up a mouthful of lichen. It tasted like steak. He glanced down the table at Aaron, who looked weary too. Cole's body felt leaden. He just wanted to go to sleep. He'd start looking for a way out of the Magisterium tomorrow.
"I don't think I'm up for games," he told Celia.
"Another time." "Maybe today was a test," Tamara said as they headed back to their rooms after dinner. "Like of our patience or our ability to take orders. Maybe tomorrow we'll get to do real training."
Aaron, trailing one of his hands along the wall as he walked, took a moment to respond.
"Yeah, maybe."
Cole didn't say anything. He was too tired. Magic, he was finding, was hard work. The next day, Tamara's hopes were dashed when they returned to the place that Cole had dubbed the Room of Sand and Boredom to finish sorting. They still had plenty of sand to go. Cole felt guilty all over again.
"But when we're done," Aaron said to Master Rufus, "we can do other stuff, right?"
"Concentrate on the task at hand,"
the mage replied enigmatically, walking out through the wall. Heaving sighs, they sat down to work. Sand sorting went on for the rest of the week, with Tamara spending all her time after classes with her sister or Jasper or other expensive-looking legacy students, and Aaron spending his time with everyone, while Cole sulked in their room. Then, sand sorting went on for another week after that. The pile of sand to sort seemed to be getting bigger and bigger, as if someone didn't want this test ever to end. Call had heard there was some kind of torture where a single drop of water hit a guy's forehead over and over again until he went insane. He had never understood how that worked before, but he understood it now.
"There's got to be an easier way," he thought.
But the scheming part of his mind must have been the same part used for magic, because he couldn't think of anything. "Look," Call said finally, "you guys are good at this, right? The best mages in the tests? Top-ranked." The other two gazed at him glassy-eyed. Aaron looked like maybe he'd been hit on the head by a falling boulder when no one was looking.
"I guess," Tamara said. She didn't sound too excited about it. "The best in our year, anyway."
"Okay, well, I'm terrible. The worst. I was in last place, and I've already messed things up for us, so obviously I don't know anything."
"But there must be a faster way, something we're supposed to be doing, some lesson we're supposed to be learning. Is there anything you can think of? Anything?"
A note of pleading had entered his voice. Tamara hesitated. Aaron shook his head. Call saw her expression.
"What? Is there something?"
"Well, there are some magical principles, some special ways of tapping into the elements," she said,
her black braids swinging as she moved into a different sitting position.
"Stuff that Master Rufus probably doesn't want us to know about."
Aaron nodded eagerly, the hope of making it out of this room lighting his face.
"You know how Rufus was talking about feeling the power in the earth and all that?"
Tamara wasn't looking at them. She was staring at the piles of sand like she was focused on something far away.
"Well, there's a way to get more power fast, but you have to open yourself up to the element, and, well, eat a grain of sand."
"Eat the sand," Call said. "You have to be kidding."
"It's kind of dangerous, because of that whole first principle of magic thing, but it works for the same reason. You're closer to the element. Like if you're doing earth magic, you eat rocks or sand. Fire mages can eat matches. Air mages might consume blood for its oxygen. It's not a good idea, but..."
Call thought of Jasper grinning around his bloody finger at the trial. His heart started to pound.
"How do you know this?"
Tamara looked at the wall.
She took a deep breath. "My dad. He taught me how, for emergencies, he said, but he considers doing well on a test an emergency. I've never done it, though, because it scares me. If you get too much power and can't control it, you could get drawn into an element. It burns away your soul and replaces it with fire, air, water, earth, or chaos. You become a creature of that element. Like an elemental."
"One of those lizard things?" Aaron asked.
Call was relieved he hadn't had to be the one to ask that exact same question. Tamara shook her head.
"Elementals come in all sizes, small like those lizards, or big and bloated on magic like wyverns and dragons and sea serpents, or even human size. So we'd have to be careful."
"I can be careful," Call said. "How about you, Aaron?"
Aaron ran grainy hands through his blonde hair and shrugged.
"Anything is better than this. And if we finish faster than Master Rufus expects, he'll have to give us something else to do."
"Okay. Here goes nothing."
Tamara licked the tip of her finger and touched it to the pile of sand. A few grains stuck. Then she put her finger in her mouth. Call and Aaron copied her. As Call jammed his wet finger into his mouth, he couldn't help wondering what he would have thought if a week ago someone had told him he'd be sitting in an underground cavern eating sand. The sand didn't taste bad. It didn't taste like anything, really. He swallowed the rough grains down and waited. "Now what?" he asked after a few seconds. He was starting to get a little nervous. Nothing had happened to Jasper at the trial, he told himself. Nothing would happen to them.
"Now we concentrate,"
Tamara said. Cole looked at the pile of sand. This time, when he slid his thoughts toward it, he could sense each of the tiny grains. Minuscule pieces of shell sparkle in his mind, beside crystal pieces and yellowish stones honeycombed with crags. He tried to imagine picking up the whole pile of sand in his hands. It would be heavy, and the sand would spill between his fingers and pool on the floor. He tried to blank out everything around him, Tamara and Aaron, the cold stone under him, the faint rush of wind in the room, and narrow his concentration down to the only two things that mattered. Himself and the pile of sand. The sand felt completely solid and light, like styrofoam. It would be easy to lift. He could lift it with one hand, with one finger, with one thought. He imagined it rising and separating. The sand pile lurched, spilling a few grains from the top, and then drifted upward. It hung over the three of them like a small storm cloud. Tamara and Aaron both stared. Cole fell back on his hands. His legs were prickling with pins and needles. He must have sat on them wrong. He'd been concentrating too hard to notice. "Your turn," he said, and it seemed to him that the walls were closer, that he could feel the pulse of the earth underneath him. He wondered what it would be like to sink into the ground. "Absolutely," said Aaron. The cloud of sand broke apart into two halves, one composed of lighter sand, the other darker. Tamara raised her hand and drew a lazy spiral on the air. Call and Aaron watched in wonder as the sand swirled into different patterns above them. The wall opened. Master Rufus stood on the threshold, his face a mask. Tamara made a little squeaking sound and the hovering pile of sand crashed down, sending up puffs of dust that made Call choke.
"What have you done?"
Master Rufus demanded. Aaron looked pale.
We didn't mean..."
Master Rufus gestured sharply toward them.
"Aaron, be quiet. Callum, come with me."
"What?" Call began. "But I..." "That's not fair."
"Come with me,"
Rufus repeated.
"Now."
Call rose gingerly to his feet, his weak leg stinging. He glanced at Aaron and Tamara, but they were looking down at their hands, not at him. So much for loyalty, he thought as he followed Master Rufus out of the room. Rufus led him on a short walk through some twisting corridors to his office. It wasn't what Cole expected. The furnishings were modern. Steel bookcases filled one wall, and a sleek leather couch, big enough to nap on, stretched along the other. Tacked to one side of the room were pages and pages of what looked like scrawled equations, but with odd markings instead of numbers. They hung above a rough, wooden workstation whose surface was blotched with stains and covered with knives, beakers, and the taxidermied bodies of weird-looking animals. Beside delicate, geared models that looked like mousetraps crossed with clocks, There was a live animal in a small, barred cage. One of those lizards with blue flames running along its back. Rufus's desk was tucked into a corner, an old roll-top that was at odds with the rest of the room. On top of it was a glass jar holding a tiny tornado spinning in place. Cole couldn't take his eyes off it, expecting it to burst out of the jar at any moment.
"Colum, sit down," said Master Rufus, indicating the couch. "I want to explain why I brought you to the Magisterium."
Chapter 8. Cole stared. After 2 weeks of sand sorting, he'd given up on the idea that Rufus was ever going to be forward or direct with him. In fact, he realized he'd given up on the idea that he'd ever really find out why he was at the Magisterium at all.
"Sit,"
Rufus said again. And this time, Cole sat, wincing as his leg twinged. The couch was comfortable, after hours of sitting on a cold stone floor, and he let himself sink into it.
"What do you think of our school so far?"
Before Cole could answer, there was the sound of rushing wind. He blinked, and realized it was coming from the jar on Master Rufus's desk. The small tornado inside it was darkening and condensing into a shape. A moment later, it had taken the form of a miniature, olive-green, uniformed assembly member. It was a man with very dark hair. He blinked around.
"Rufus," he said. "Rufus, are you there?"
Rufus made an impatient noise and flipped the jar over.
"Not now,"
he said to it. And the image inside became a tornado again.
"Is that like a telephone?"
Cole asked, awed.
"Something like a telephone," said Rufus. "As I said before, the concentration of elemental magic in the Magisterium interferes with most technology. Besides, we prefer to do things our own way."
"My dad is probably really worried, not having heard from me, and so..." Cole started.
Master Rufus leaned against his desk, crossing his arms over his broad chest.
"First," he said, "I want to know what you think of the Magisterium and your training."
"It's easy," Cole said. "Boring and pointless, but easy."
Rufus gave a thin smile.
"What you did in there was very clever," he said. "You want to make me angry because you think that if you do, I'll send you home. And you believe you want to be sent home."
Cole had actually given up on that plan. Saying obnoxious things just came naturally to him. He shrugged.
"You must wonder why I chose you," Rufus said. "You, the last of all those ranked, the least competent of all the potential mages. I suppose you imagine that it is because I saw something in you, some potential the other masters had missed, some untapped well of skill, maybe even something that reminded me of myself."
His tone was lightly mocking. Cole was silent.
"I took you on," Rufus continued, "because you do have skill and power. But you also have a great deal of anger. And you have almost no control at all. I did not want you to be a burden on one of the other mages, nor did I want one of them to choose you for the wrong reasons."
His eyes flicked toward the tornado, spinning in its upside-down jar.
"Many years ago, I made a mistake with a student. A mistake that had grave consequences. Taking you on is my penance."
Cole's stomach felt as if it wanted to curl up inside him like a kicked puppy. It hurt being told that he was so unpleasant, he was someone's punishment.
"So send me home," he burst out. If you just took me because you don't feel like one of the other mages should have to teach me, send me home.
Rufus shook his head.
You still don't understand, he said. Uncontrolled magic, like yours, is a danger. Sending you home to your small town would be the equivalent of dropping a bomb on them. But make no mistake, Colum. If you persist in disobedience, if you refuse to learn to control your magic, then I will send you home. But I will bind your magic first.
Bind my magic?
Yes. Until a mage passes through the first gate at the end of his iron year, his or her magic can be bound by one of the masters. You would be unable to access the elements, unable to use your power. And we would take your memories of magic, too, so that all you would know was that you were missing something, some essential part of yourself, but you would no longer know what it was. You would spend your life tormented by the loss of something you didn't remember losing. Is that what you want?
No, Call whispered.
If I believe that you're holding back the others or that you're untrainable, you're done here. But if you make it through this whole year and pass through the first gate, then no one can ever take your magic away. Make it through this year, and you can drop out of the Magisterium if you want. You'll have learned enough to no longer be a danger to the world. Think on that, Colum Hunt, as you sort your sand the way I instructed you to. Grain by grain.
Master Rufus paused, and then made a dismissive gesture, indicating that Call could go.
Think on that. And make your choice.
Concentrating on moving the sand was as grueling as ever, more so because of how pleased Call had been with their cleverness in coming up with a better solution. For once, he'd felt that maybe they could really be a team, maybe even friends. Now Aaron and Tamara concentrated quietly, and when he looked over at them, they wouldn't meet his gaze. They were probably mad at him, Call thought. He'd been the one who'd insisted that someone come up with a better way of doing the exercise, and even though he was the one who'd been dragged into Rufus's office, they were all going to be in trouble. Maybe Tamara even thought he'd finked on her, plus it was his magic that had scattered their piles that first day. He was a burden on the group, and they all knew it.
Fine, Call thought. All Master Rufus said I had to do was get through this year, so I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be the best mage here, just because no one thinks I can be. I never really tried before, but I'm going to try now. I'm going to be better than you both, and then, when I've impressed you and you really want me to be your friend, I'm going to turn around and tell you how much I don't need you or the Magisterium. As soon as I pass through the first gate and they can't bind my magic anymore, I'm going home, and no one can stop me. That's what I'm going to tell Dad, too, as soon as I get to that tornado phone.
He spent the rest of the day moving sand with his mind, but instead of doing it the way he had the first day, straining to capture each grain, pushing it with all the desperate effort of his brain, today he let himself experiment. He tried a lighter and lighter touch, tried rolling the sand instead of lifting it into the air. Then he tried to move more than one bit of sand at once. He'd done it before, after all. The trick was that he'd thought of it as one thing, a sand cloud, instead of as 300 individual grains. Maybe he could do the same thing now. Thinking of all the dark grains as one thing, he tried pulling with his mind, but there were too many, and he lost focus. He gave up on that idea and concentrated on 5 grains of dark sand. These he was able to move, rolling them together toward the pile. He slumped back, amazed, feeling he'd done something incredible. He wanted to say something to Aaron, but instead, He kept his mouth shut and practiced his new technique, getting better and better at it, until he was moving 20 grains at a time. He couldn't do better than that, though, no matter how hard he struggled. Aaron and Tamara saw what he was doing, but neither one of them said anything, nor did they try to imitate him. That night, Call dreamed of sand. He was sitting on a beach, trying to build a castle for a naked mole rat caught in a storm, but the wind kept blowing the sand away as the water grew closer and closer. Finally, frustrated, he stood up and kicked at the castle until it came apart and became a huge monster with enormous sand arms and legs. It chased him down the beach, always about to grab him, but never quite close enough, as it shouted at him in Master Rufus's voice,
"Remember what your father said about magic, boy. It'll cost you everything."
The next day, Master Rufus didn't drop them off and leave as usual. Instead, he sat down in a far corner of the room of sand and boredom, took out a book and a waxed paper packet, and started to read. After about 2 hours, he unwrapped the packet. It was a ham and cheese sandwich on rye bread. He appeared to be indifferent to Colum's method of moving more than one grain at a time, so Aaron and Tamara started doing it too. Things moved faster then. That day they actually managed to sort all the sand before dinner time. Master Rufus looked over what they'd done, nodded in satisfaction, and kicked it all back into one big pile again.
"Tomorrow, you're going to sort by 5 gradations of color," he said.
The three of them groaned in unison. Things went on like that for another week and a half. Outside of class, Tamara and Aaron ignored Call, and Call ignored them right back. But they got better at moving sand. Better, more precise, and more able to concentrate on multiple grains at once. Meanwhile, at meals, they heard about the lessons the other apprentices were receiving, which all sounded more interesting than sand, especially when those lessons backfired, like when Drew set himself on fire and managed to burn up one of the boats and singe Rafe's hair before he was able to put himself out. Or when Milagros's and Tanaka's students were practicing together and Kai Hale dropped a lizard elemental down the back of Jasper's shirt. Call thought Kai might deserve a medal. Or when Gwenda decided she liked one of the mushroom cap pizza things so much that she wanted more of it, and inflated the mushroom so large that it pushed everyone, even the masters, out of the refectory for several days until its growth could be tamed and they could hack their way back in. Dinner, the night they were able to use the refectory again, was lichen and more pudding, no mushrooms at all, anywhere. The interesting thing about the lichen was that it never tasted the same. Sometimes it tasted like steak, and sometimes like fish tacos or vegetables with spicy hot sauce, even if it was the same color. The gray pudding that night tasted like butterscotch. When Celia caught Call going back for fourths, she tapped his wrist playfully with her spoon.
"Come on, you should come to the gallery," she said. "There's great snacks there."
Call glanced up the table at Aaron and Tamara, who shrugged agreement. The three of them were still being stiff and silent with one another, only talking when they had to. Call wondered if they planned to forgive him ever, or if this was it, and it was going to be awkward for the rest of the time he was here. Call dropped his bowl back on the table, and a few minutes later found himself part of a laughing group of Iron Year students making their way toward the gallery. Call noticed that as they went, the glittering crystals on the walls made it seem like the corridor was covered in a fine layer of snow. He wondered if any of these corridors led in the direction of Master Rufus's office. Not a day went by that he didn't think about sneaking in there and using the tornado phone. But until Master Rufus taught them how to control the boats, Call needed another route. They walked through an unfamiliar part of the tunnels, one that seemed to slope gently upward, with a shortcut over an underground lake. For once, Call didn't mind the extra distance, because this part of the caves had a bunch of cool things to look at. A flowstone formation of white calcite that looked like a frozen waterfall, concretions in the shape of fried eggs, and stalagmites that had turned blue and green from the copper in the rock. Call, moving slower than the others, was in the back, and Celia dropped back to chat with him. She pointed out things he hadn't seen before, like the holes high up in the rocks where bats and salamanders lived. They passed through a big circular room with two passages leading from it. One had the word gallery picked out above it in sparkling rock crystal. The other read, "The Mission Gate."
"What's that?" Call asked. "It's another way out of the caves,"
Drew, overhearing, told him. Then he looked weirdly guilty, as if he wasn't supposed to tell. Maybe Call wasn't the only one who didn't understand the rules of magic school. When he looked closer, he saw Drew looked about as exhausted as Call felt.
"But you can't just leave,"
Celia added, giving Call a wry look, as if she thought that every time he heard about a new exit, he was going to consider whether or not he could escape that way.
"It's only for apprentices on missions."
"Missions?" Call asked, as they followed the others toward the gallery. He remembered her saying something about them before, when she'd explained why all the apprentices weren't at the Magisterium.
"Errands for masters, fighting elementals, fighting the Chaos Ridden," Celia said. "You know, mage stuff."
"Right," Call thought. "Pick up some deadly nightshade and kill a wyvern on your way back, no problem."
But he didn't want to make Celia mad, since she was pretty much the only person still talking to him, so he kept those thoughts to himself. The gallery was huge, with a ceiling at least 100 feet above them and a lake at one end stretching off into the distance, with several small islands dotting the surface. A few kids were splashing in the water, which steamed gently. A movie was playing on one crystal wall. Call had seen the movie before, but he was sure what was happening on the screen hadn't actually happened in the version he'd seen.
"I love this part,"
Tamara said, rushing over to where kids had arranged themselves on rows of oversized, velvety-looking toadstools. Jasper appeared and plunked himself down directly next to her. Aaron looked slightly puzzled, but followed anyway.
"You have to try the fizzy drinks," Celia said,
pulling Call over to a rocky ledge where an enormous glass beverage dispenser, full of what looked like water, rested beside 3 stalactites. She picked up a glass, filled it from the twist spout, and stuck it beneath one of the stalactites. A spurt of blue liquid splashed down into the water, and a mini whirlpool appeared inside the glass, spinning the blue liquid and the clear liquid together. Bubbles rose to the top.
"Go on, try it,"
Celia urged. Call gave the drink a suspicious look, then took the glass from her and swigged down the liquid.
It felt like crystals of sweet blueberry and caramel and strawberry were bursting inside his mouth. "This is fantastic," he said when he was done swallowing. "The green is my favorite," Celia said, grinning around a glass she'd poured for herself. "It tastes like a melted lollipop."
There were piles of other interesting-looking snacks on the ledge, bowls of shiny rocks that were clearly spun out of sugar, pretzels wound into the shapes of alchemical symbols and sparkling with salt, and a bowl of what looked like crispy potato chips at first glance, but were darker gold when you looked at them closely. Call tried one. It tasted almost exactly like buttered popcorn.
"Come on," Celia said, grabbing his wrist. "We're missing the movie."
She drew him toward the velvety toadstools. Call went a little reluctantly. Things were still fraught with Tamara and Aaron. He thought it might be better to avoid them and explore the gallery on his own. But no one was paying attention to him anyway. They were all watching the movie being projected on the far wall. Jasper kept leaning over to say things in Tamara's ear that made her giggle, and Aaron was chatting with Kai on his other side. Fortunately, there were enough older kids around to make it easy for Call not to sit too close to the other apprentices in his group, without it seeming intentional. As Call relaxed into his seat, he realized that the movie wasn't being projected exactly. A solid block of colored air hovered against the rock wall, colors swirling in and out of it impossibly fast, creating the illusion of a screen. "Air magic," he said, half to himself.
"Alex Strike does the movies."
Celia was hugging her knees, intent on the screen.
"You probably know him."
"Why would I know him?"
"He's a bronze year, one of the best students. He assists Master Rufus sometimes."
There was admiration in her voice. Call glanced back over his shoulders. In the shadows behind the rows of toadstool cushions was a taller chair. The lanky, brown-haired boy who'd brought them sandwiches for the past few days was sitting in it, his eyes intent on the screen in front of him. His fingers were moving back and forth, a little like a puppeteer's. As he moved them, the shapes on the screen shifted.
"That's really cool,"
the little, treacherous voice inside Call said.
"I want to do that."
He pushed the voice down. He was leaving as soon as he passed through the first gate of magic. He was never going to be a copper year or bronze year or any other year than this one. When the movie ended, Call was pretty sure he didn't remember a scene in Star Wars where Darth Vader made a conga line with Ewoks, but he'd only seen it once. Everyone jumped up and clapped. Alex Strike shook his hair back and grinned. When he saw Call looking at him, he nodded. Everyone soon spread out through the room to play with other fun stuff. It was like an arcade, Call thought, but with no supervision. There was a hot pool of water that bubbled with many colors. Some of the older students, including Tamara's sister and Alex, were swimming in it, amusing themselves by making little whirlpools dance along the surface of the water. Call stuck his legs in it for a while. It felt good after all the walking he'd been doing, and then joined Drew and Rafe in feeding the tame bats, which would sit on their shoulders while they fed them pieces of fruit. Drew kept giggling as the bat's soft wings tickled his cheek. Later, Call joined up with Kai and Gwenda to play a weird game involving batting around a ball of blue fire that turned out to be cold when it struck him in the chest. Ice crystals clung to his gray uniform, but he didn't mind. The gallery was so much fun that he forgot to worry about Master Rufus, about his father, about bound magic, or even about Aaron and Tamara hating him.
"Will it be hard to give this up?"
he wondered. He imagined being a mage and playing in bubbling springs and conjuring movies out of thin air. He imagined being good at this stuff, one of the masters even. But then he thought of his dad sitting at the kitchen table all by himself, worrying over Call, and felt awful. When Drew, Celia, and Aaron started back toward the rooms, he decided to go with them. If he stayed up any later, he'd be cranky in the morning, and besides, he wasn't sure he knew the way without them. They retraced their steps through the caves. It was the first time in days Call felt relaxed.
"Where's Tamara?"
Celia asked as they walked. Call had seen her standing with her sister when they left, and was about to answer when Aaron spoke. Arguing with her sister. Call was surprised.
"What about?" Aaron shrugged. Kimayo was saying that Tamara shouldn't be wasting her time in the gallery in her iron year playing games. Said she ought to be studying. Cole frowned. He'd always kind of wanted a sibling, but he was suddenly reconsidering. Beside him, Aaron stiffened.
What's that noise?
It's coming from the mission gate, Celia replied, looking worried.
A moment later, Cole heard it too. The tread of booted feet on stone, the echo of voices bouncing off rock walls.
Someone calling for help.
Aaron took off, running up the passage toward the mission gate. The rest of them hesitated before following him. Drew, hanging back so much that he kept pace with Cole's hurrying. The passage started to fill up with people pushing past them, almost knocking Cole over. Something clamped onto his arm and he found himself pulled back against a wall.
Aaron.
Aaron had flattened himself against the stone and was watching, his mouth a thin line, as a group of older kids, some of them wearing silver wrist cuffs, some gold, came limping through the passage. Some were being carried on makeshift stretchers strapped together from branches. One boy was being supported by two other apprentices. The whole front of his uniform looked like it had been burned away, the skin underneath red and bubbly. All of them had scorch marks on their uniforms and black soot streaking their faces. Most were bleeding. Drew looked like he was going to cry. Cole heard Celia, who had pressed herself to the wall next to Aaron, whisper something about fire elementals. Cole stared as a boy went by on a stretcher, writhing in agony. His uniform sleeve was burned away, and his arm seemed to be glowing from the inside like a piece of kindling in a fire.
Fire wants to burn, Cole thought.
You! You Iron Years! You shouldn't be here!
It was Master North, scowling as he detached himself from the group of the wounded. Cole wasn't sure how he'd spotted them, or why he was there. They didn't wait to be told twice. They scattered. Chapter 9. The next day was more sand and more tiredness. That night in the refectory, Cole slumped down at the table with his plate of lichen and a pile of cookies that appeared to sparkle with crystalline chunks. Celia bit into one, and it made a sound like cracking glass.
These are safe to eat, right?
Cole asked Tamara, who was spooning up some kind of purple pudding that stained her lips and tongue a deep indigo. She rolled her eyes. There were dark smudges under them, but she was, as always, otherwise composed. Resentment twinged in Cole's chest.
Tamara was a robot, he decided. A robot with no human feelings.
He hoped she shorted out. Celia, seeing the ferocious way he was looking at Tamara, tried to say something, but her mouth was full of cookie. A few seats down, Aaron was saying,
All we do is divide sand into piles, for hours and hours. I mean, I'm sure it's for a reason, but...
Well, I feel sorry for you, Jasper interrupted. Master Lemuel's apprentices have been fighting elementals, and we've been doing awesome things with Master Milagros. We made fireballs, and she showed us how to use the metal in the earth to levitate ourselves. I got almost an inch off the ground.
Wow, said Cole, his voice dripping contempt. A whole inch.
Jasper whipped around on Cole, eyes bright with anger.
It's because of you that Aaron and Tamara have to suffer, because you did so badly in the tests. That's why your whole group is stuck in the sandbox, while the rest of us get to hit the playing field.
Cole felt the blood rush up into his face.
It wasn't true. It couldn't be true.
He saw Aaron down the table, shake his head and start to speak, but Jasper wasn't stopping. With a sneer, he added,
And I wouldn't be so snotty about levitating if I was you, Hunt.
If you could ever learn to levitate yourself, maybe you wouldn't slow down Tamara and Aaron so much, limping along after them.
The moment after the words left his mouth, Jasper looked shocked. Like even he hadn't expected to go so far. It wasn't the first time anyone had ever said something like that to Cole, but it was always like a bucket of cold water being thrown in his face. Aaron sat up straight, eyes wide. Tamara slammed her hand down on the table.
"Shut up, Jasper! We're not sorting sand because of Cole. We're sorting sand because of me. It's my fault, okay?" "What? No!"
Jasper seemed totally confused. Clearly, he hadn't meant to upset Tamara. Maybe he'd even hoped to impress her.
"You did really well at the trial. We all did, except him. He took my spot. Your master felt sorry for him and wanted—"
Aaron stood up, gripping his fork in his hand. He looked furious.
"It wasn't your spot,"
he spat out at Jasper.
"It's more than just points. It's about who the master wants to teach, and I can see exactly why Master Rufus didn't want you."
He'd said it loudly enough that people at nearby tables were staring. With a last, disgusted look at Jasper, Aaron threw the fork he was holding onto the table and stalked off, his shoulders stiff. Jasper turned back to Tamara.
"I guess you have two crazy people in your group, not just one."
Tamara gave Jasper a long, considering look. Then she picked up her bowl of pudding and turned it upside down on top of his head. Purple goop ran down his face. He yelped in surprise. For a moment, Cole was too shocked to react. Then he burst out laughing. So did Celia. Laughter broke out up and down the table as Jasper wrestled the bowl off his head. Cole laughed even harder. Tamara wasn't laughing, though. She looked like she couldn't believe she'd lost her composure so thoroughly. She stood frozen for a long moment, then stumbled to her feet and ran for the door in the direction Aaron had gone. Across the room, her sister, Kimaya, disapprovingly watched her go, arms crossed over her chest. Jasper threw his bowl onto the table and shot Cole a look of pure, anguished hatred. His hair was coated with pudding.
"Could have been worse," Cole said. "Could have been that green stuff."
Master Milagros appeared at Jasper's side. She shoved some napkins at him and demanded to know what had happened. Master Lemuel, who had been sitting at the closest table, rose and came over to lecture everyone, joined halfway through by Master Rufus, whose face was as impassive as ever. The babble of adult voices went on, but Cole wasn't paying attention. In his whole 12 years, Cole couldn't remember anyone but his dad ever defending him, not when people kicked his weak leg out from under him during soccer, or laughed at him for being benched during gym class, or picked last for every team. He thought of Tamara dumping the pudding on Jasper's head, and then of Aaron saying, "It's more than just points. It's about who the master wants to teach." And he felt a little warm glow inside. Then he thought about the real reason Master Rufus wanted to teach him. And the glow went out. Cole walked back to their rooms alone, through echoing rock passageways. When he got there, Tamara was sitting on the couch, her hands curved around a steaming stone cup. Aaron was talking to her in a low voice.
"Hey," Cole said, standing awkwardly in the doorway, not sure if he should leave or not. "Thanks for... well, just thanks."
Tamara looked up at him with a sniff. "Are you coming in or not?" Since it would be even more awkward to linger around in the hallway, Cole let the door swing shut behind him and started toward his room.
"Cole, stay," Tamara said.
He turned to look at her and Aaron, who was sitting on the arm of the sofa, dividing anxious glances between Call and Tamara. Tamara's dark hair was still